Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. The thermometer may only say it's around 90. But it is a lot hotter than that. I know that the feels like is over the 100 degree mark. So be careful if you're out and about. It is going to be like this for a few days. Unlike the weather apparently that has been in Nashville, where it has just been like monsoon season. I mean, I've heard nothing but talk about the rain and the rain and the rain there in Nashville. And Jason Caldwell, who was on with us yesterday, talking about, finally getting away from it. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio on this Thursday. And Ferg, I guess, I mean, it made it tough to enjoy Broadway and some of downtown Nashville.
Yeah, the storm was pretty fierce on Tuesday night. So a lot of staying close to the hotel on Tuesday night. But, yeah, it was an interesting setup in Nashville. Seems like the SEC's set to move this sucker around now with Dallas next year, but it was a solid trip. I know I'm lucky that every media days I've covered has been within driving distance. I know that's not the case for everybody in the league. That changes next
everything's
year.
Everything's within driving distance as long as it's one of the continental United States, but it just depends on how long you want to drive.
Yeah. I've done Dallas to Auburn before. I don't think I would want to do that back and forth driving-wise. So we'll see. We'll see what it ends up looking like next year. But, yeah, a good bit of stuff we learned from media days, and I know Dan's been holding it down up there for y'all, and yeah, it was a lot of good stuff up there from a lot of different folks.
All right, you came back yesterday. Today, I said it sounds like an old folk trio or something. Shane, Lane, and Josh were on the schedule today as Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Tennessee wrapping things up. Now, it'll be tomorrow before we get the results of the media voting for – preseason all conference for the projected standings. I'll be shocked if anybody but Georgia is the overall pick to win the conference.
Yep.
Georgia will be picked to win the East in the final year of divisions. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if it's LSU or Alabama in the West.
I feel like LSU is going to be kind of the one people are leaning towards.
They're the popular choice.
They were my pick on my ballot that I turned in today. I like what they've got coming. And here's the thing: Alabama is the most, one of the most talented teams on paper we've ever seen. But there's still like just some crazy question marks from what they lost, but also like what the quarterback situation is going to look like. The offensive line's been rough for them. Was rough for them last season. New coordinators and all that. It'll be fascinating to see what Bama ends up doing this year. But this is going to be an interesting a week. And then I wouldn't expect Auburn to get much all SEC love on my ballot. I think I only had two guys on there.
Who were they?
DJ James, and I had Oscar Chapman down as one of the punters. You could make an argument for Jarquez. I think there's some guys who have been starting running backs that could get the nod there. You can make the argument for maybe some other guys, but really, I think Jarquez
isn't going to get a lot of votes just because of the question right now.
Also true. That's also true. And there's some really good running backs coming back in this league this year. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Auburn put up a lot of guys. When you see like defensive line, you could have voted for Keldrick Falk if you wanted to. I mean, it's just interesting to see kind of who they put up for grabs there. But I think Auburn might get some love in the secondary. May get some love in special teams. Brian Battee will probably get some. We'll get a look at with the return man as well. So, but yeah, I think it'll be interesting where Auburn is picked to finish in the West. If they'll be ahead of Mississippi State, I think is going to be the ultimate question.
Yeah, I think so too. I think those are the two teams that one or the other, I think, is going to be projected to be at the bottom of the West.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that, I mean, and the media has been way, way wrong many, many times.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, don't get too upset about that, but I think that's the way it's going
to
be.
Auburn is historically a team that does not live up to the preseason expectations in the conference. Now, last year, they were picked to finish last. They came second to last because of the A&M game and just how A&M fell off last year. But, you know, I think they're a team that, you know, we were talking about this week. It's just expectations in the preseason. Like, Auburn could exceed them, but, like, the way this schedule and this conference is shaking out, I can see them, you know, a good year being, you know, fourth or fifth in the league. You know, maybe not a good year, fifth. Good.
Fourth or fifth would probably get you in a decent bowl, though.
Right, yeah. I think, you know, it's LSU and it's Alabama, and then it's just like A&M should be a lot better this year. Ole Miss should be good as well. And then Arkansas, like,
Arkansas's got some offensive firepower.
They got some offensive firepower. Their backfield's really good.
Yes.
And then after that, I'm just kind of – I just have questions about them. But, you know, Auburn, you know, has a schedule where they'll play State at home. They'll play Ole Miss at home. They got some swing games. You know, it's something we're talking – I wrote about in the mailbag for tomorrow, like – I think Auburn fans, you know, this time of year, be excited. Be high, you know, get excited about the season. But I don't want people to get the expectations so high that if Auburn only goes 7-5 this season, that they're wildly disappointed, because 7-5 would be progress. And I think the right 7-5 could really get the ball rolling for the future. But, you know, it's not out of the question this team wins 8 or more games either. Just I think, you know, if they get hot at the right time and certain things fall a certain way, Auburn, like we said, has been known to exceed expectations, especially in year one of a coach's tenure.
Yeah, I mean, if you just sort of step back and take off the, you know, the orange and blue glasses and look at what everyone else sees, you see a team that has turned its roster over. 50% of its roster is brand new.
Yeah.
You have, I mean, with the coaching change you've always got Alabama and Georgia on the schedule. It's difficult to be an unbiased person and say, oh, yeah, this team's going to win 7 or 8 ball games, especially after the way things have gone the last couple of years. But I think you're exactly right. Auburn has thrived in the past when it hasn't gotten a lot of respect as well. So yeah. they can you know, play with that chip on their shoulder. But we just don't know. You have to assume that the pieces are going to come together. It looks like there are some pretty good pieces to add. I mean, Hugh Freeze was talking about he knows that Auburn is a better team. They have better talent now than when he took over.
Absolutely.
But as he said, other teams are improving their talent too, and you still have to see how these pieces work together. You've got to see, you know, that the quarterback situation takes real shape, that you don't you don't want to be going into the season still competing for the quarterback job through the first couple of ball games.
Yeah, I mean, I think there could be a scenario where they play multiple guys, but you don't want to necessarily sit there and say, okay, and we got to figure out who
we don't know.
Yeah, the one thing about this team, when you talk about the excitement, the transfer, the roster is better, but you also got to keep in mind the roster is also the bulk of the new guys on this roster have never played SEC football before. Some of them played Power Five football,
right?
But a good chunk of them have been playing at lower levels. And I'm not saying you can't come in and play well in the SEC. We've seen plenty of guys do it. But, I mean, it's a lot of unknown. And the other thing, I mean, you don't have to remind Auburn fans of this, but I think you need to kind of put it in perspective. Like, they've had back-to-back losing seasons. They have fallen off where they have been in recruiting the last few cycles. And they've had a ton of attrition. Like, this is not the same situation that Brian Harsin inherited. This is not the same situation that Gus Malzahn inherited.
The last time Auburn had back-to-back losing seasons before these last two was 80 and 81, wasn't it?
I believe that's the
case. Because Auburn had non-winning seasons.
Yeah, in 91 and 92, yeah.
Yeah, one was 500.
And I think...
Or was it
98?
Terry what was
Terry's last year and Tubbs' first year? It was also a losing season.
Okay, so that was
the
98, 99.
But again, yeah, it doesn't
happen very often.
Oh no, and you know, under the same head coach, you got to go all the way back to the end of the Pat Dye era,
right?
When that happened, or at least when you didn't have non-winning seasons.
Yeah, you've got to go way way back.
And so it is kind of
the same coach,
it's kind of new territory. Like, you look at, I mean, even You know, with the thing with Tuberville, it's like you had one losing season. 2 years earlier, they were in the SEC title game. Mm-hmm. You know, the end of Tuberville's tenure. You know, it was 5-6. The 2 years before that, they combined to win 20 games. Like, so it's a completely different – Malzahn never had a losing season. So, like, you were in a rare spot. And Dan and I talked about this week, and I think just hearing Hugh Freeze and others talk about it as kind of the big picture vision, if you're going to have a year where you're probably not going to be a contender and you need to just get the ball rolling again and kind of reset – the last year of the SEC running divisions, not being 16 teams, before Texas and Oklahoma come in, before everything changes with the schedule, and before the playoff expands, it's not a bad year to get things figured out.
And you get Georgia and Bama both at home this year. So, I mean, just in case.
Just in case, a much better
chance than if they were on
the
road.
And we've talked about it before. It's like when you look at the swing games on Auburn's schedule or the ones where you're like, you know, these are kind of more of the toss-ups. You know, A&M on the road early in the year is going to be a really tough game, but, like, is A&M going to be that much better? We've talked about Ole Miss. We've talked about that Arkansas road trip as well and what that could look like. And then, but Alabama in the Iron Bowl, by game number 12, it's a completely different team. Like, you've played an entire season to that point. And, as we've long said, a good Auburn team in Jordan-Hare Stadium against Alabama is going to put up a fight. They may not win. You think back to 09, you think of how they should have won in 21. But, like, a good Auburn team in Jordan-Hare Stadium against Alabama, that team usually gives Alabama a really, really good game and sometimes pulls off the win. So, that's like, can Auburn get to that point? Can they survive with that schedule? I mean, especially the first three of the SEC schedule, if they can survive that without just kind of feeling deflated, they've got a potential to pick up some momentum. And then you hit that last stretch of November thinking, okay, we can make a little noise, get some momentum, maybe do something in the Iron Bowl, whether it's come close to beating Alabama or hopefully knocking it off if you're in Auburn's perspective, and run that thing right into early signing period in the bowl. Like, that's the ideal scenario, but, like, it's going to be tough because A&M, Georgia, and LSU back-to-back-to-back is as brutal as you can get really in this conference, because even if A&M was a bad team last season, they still have had two of the best recruiting classes in the country in the last 2 years, so they're going to be talented.
Oh, no question about it. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio, along with Bill, Drew at the controls. Dan should be checking in as he and Jacob from On the Line packing things up and heading back. So he'll be checking in at some point. We'd love for you to join us. Hour number one of The Drive, brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And they're also the sponsor of our hotline. One of the ways you can get through to us by calling 334-321-1390. You can also text us on The Drive text box, brought to you by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And that number is 334-564-1840. Just getting underway here on the Thursday Drive. Day four of SEC Media Days has wrapped up. Everybody headed home. Results will be out tomorrow. We'd love to hear from you here on the Thursday Drive.
It's easier to handle life's twists and turns with the help of someone who knows YanAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment of hour number one. And let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Coach Battle is up. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing? Been a while since I called.
Yeah, it has been.
Yes, sir. Got a couple of questions. Me and Patrick Sullivan, we was up at the lake house, up at his lake house, a couple of weekends ago. We were just talking some Auburn football, and we're very interested in what's going on with Hunter. That's one of the questions he had asked, and I told him, I said, next time I talk to you, once you get off the road, I have some answers for you. So what's going on with Hunter, for our running back at Auburn?
Yeah, so the situation is being handled by the university. Hugh Freeze said this week
multiple times. Not the athletics
department. The athletic department's, you know, it's not under their watch. It's the university. It's university policies and procedures, he kept citing. I will say this, though. Jarquez has been posting a lot on social media recently about him getting ready for the season. He's been training with Brad Lester, former Auburn running back. So I think the anticipation, the sense that I get, is that they expect him to play. They just don't have the availability, and there's a lot that is in the university's hands right now. And I think, honestly, we won't get any real answers until a couple of weeks when we go to fall camp and,
when you
and
see him. Because
see who's out there.
It's not standard practice for the university to issue releases about things like that either.
Absolutely.
Right, right. And that's the biggest question, because we know, like me and when Patrick were talking, we know that Hunter's going to be a key. Now, I'm hoping the kid that came from Michigan State, you know, I'm hoping he can do what he got to do. We got to, you know, see and wait to see how it plays out. But,
yeah, Auburn needs to be able to run the ball. There's no question about that.
Yes, they have to. They have to. And you know, with him training with Brad, and I know Brad personally, and, you know, Brad going to do a great job with kids when they get, you know, come to get them ready.
Mm-hmm.
But with running game, and if we got somebody to be able to throw the ball down the field, I think that, you know, me and my wife just came from right up by Columbus, Ohio, just last night. And I had all my Auburn gear. And, you know, we're not respected up north. And, of course, I'm going to stand my ground and say that, you know what, we in the South. Now, it was 68 degrees around about 6 o'clock.
Oh, wow. I mean,
look, we used to heat in the South, so we're going to be trained better. We're going to be better prepared. And, you know, Hugh Freeze is going to get our guys in here that we need to have. Of course, we're going to be back soon. And I was telling them guys up there, we better prepared and better in shape way beyond them guys up there.
Usually that is the case. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, way beyond. And just being up there, and look, being almost 50 years old and playing on the 93 team, we went undefeated with Terry Bowden back in the day. I shot two games of basketball, and trust me, guys, I won both of them.
There you go. There you go. Right, you got to defend the honor of us down here. I like it.
Right, right. Got to defend it. But, you know, in talking to that, and them guys up there know the story that's going on down here with our situation with Hunter. But I just hope that he's able to, you know, to learn from his mistakes and understand that he got to clean it up, do what he got to do, and be prepared to be able to play some ball this upcoming season. Because we got a good chance, guys, to have a great offense this year. And we ain't seen that in a long time.
No, you're right about that, man. It's good hearing from you, Lewis. Take care, man.
Yes, sir.
We need to get to our top of the hour break. Halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Come on in and join us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. It's Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio, along with Drew at the controls. Dan, hopefully making his way back from Nashville, where the SEC Media Days have wrapped up day four today with Ole Miss, Tennessee, and South Carolina. We've got a little more audio we can let you hear as we move on through, but we'd love for you to join in. I'll tell you what, something else that I want to mention. John had called the other day, last week, I believe, and said he had come across an old newspaper. Now, I don't think he mentioned it. It was the Plainsman, and he brought it by the studio today. And this is fascinating to read. First of all, it is huge. I'd forgotten how big newspapers used to be. And I don't mean just number of pages. I mean, literally, big. Oh, excuse me, I got to sneeze. Yeah, sorry about that. That one came up. It's probably the old newspaper. But no, I mean, it's great. I mean, it's probably, you know, 17 wide by 34 or something long. I mean, it's big. But I mean,
and there's a lot of pages to it.
There are a lot of pages. It is the September 30th, 1982 Auburn Plainsman. And it is great reading some of these things. I can't wait to look at some of the ads and see some of the prices in here.
Oh yeah.
And the ad on the back of the sports section, you were noting Auburn's premier entertainment club, The Warehouse.
Sure.
Now that's well before your time. And they have pretty good deals.
There you go. That's not bad.
Pictures for $375. I don't think that was that unbelievably cheap back then. Mm-hmm. I remember the name. I don't think I ever entered The Warehouse. It says across from Village Mall. But as I'm reading the sports, there's some unbelievable stuff. One is an entertaining column written by the assistant sports editor, I believe, Mark Stevenson, who writes about being treated to prophetic visions. He talks about going into a cave and having an eerie voice tell him some things that are going to happen in the future. And again, remember, this is September of 82.
Yeah.
Auburn is starting its second year. They've just beaten Tennessee on their way to an 8-3 season and a matchup with Doug Flutie in the Tangerine Bowl. But so Mark Stevenson writes, and he has some really funny stuff in here, and he's right on a couple. As Justin confirmed, he's right about the Moses Malone Philadelphia 76ers winning the NBA title. But he has two mentions of Auburn football.
Yeah, this is crazy.
And this is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first one he says Jordan Hare Dye Studio, not Jordan Hare Stadium,
mm-hmm.
but Jordan Hare Dye Studio will see an undefeated Tigers regular season in 1989. Now, Auburn didn't go unbeaten at 89, but that was a pretty significant season.
Very.
I mean, nobody had any idea at that time in 1982 that Alabama would be visiting for the first time and Auburn would beat Alabama and win the SEC in 89. Now, he does go on and add that War Eagle Cablevision will show Auburn's games to 87 million households, the largest college sports cable network in the free world. So he's having fun, but I was like, wow, he mentioned 89. But then 4 or 5 paragraphs later, after a couple of shots at Pete Rose and Steve Garvey, which I think are great, he then says, Auburn will win the College Football Association National Championship in 1993, but will have the title taken away when a CFA investigation will reveal that a Tiger booster offered every member of the starting backfield a stick of gum without demanding immediate payment. The CFA will rule that the gum constitutes substantial and material inducement to perform acts of an athletic nature in public view, whatever that means. But can you believe the 2 years? I mean, Auburn, of course, had the 11-0, the unbeaten season when they were on probation in 93.
It's insane that somebody could be that close. 6-10 years in advance.
Like, it's 7 and 11 years in advance. So, hey, thanks to John, who I can't wait. I'm going to go through, like I said, I want to see some of the ads for places and see if I see some prices and maybe pull some other stories. But we've got plenty to talk about here. Day 4 of the SEC Media Days wrapped up today with 3 more teams, the final 3 teams. Tomorrow, the SEC will release the results of the voting by the media for all conference selections and the predicted order of finish. So we'll have that for you tomorrow. Justin Ferguson was up in Nashville Monday through Wednesday, coming back yesterday. We talked a little bit about some of Hugh Freeze's info that he passed along to the Auburn beat before he went there into the media room. How concerned are you about his comments about Brian Battee?
It's always noteworthy when a coach this far in advance is talking about somebody's injury. I think it's realistic to think he won't be 100% for the start of the season. He said, you know, he'd like him to be the progress.
Did he say suck it up or something like
he
that?
He said he will suck it up and go through it. He would like the recovery to be further along than it is. I think they just got to be smart with him. They know what kind of value he can
bring.
And
that is so important. I mean, the ability to cut and the explosion there from a running back, especially one like him and a returner, is so much more important. If it were, you know, if he were a lineman, it wouldn't be as critical. But, I mean, that's a big, big part of his game.
Yeah, I think it really shows you that, you know, you would like him – you know, be smart with them, be safe with them. Might be, you know, valuable as a kick returner more early on, but maybe you get him into the rotation and get him kind of rolling with the running backs. But I think that's going to make it critical for Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb to be ready to rock as young guys. And running back is the most plug and play position on the roster. Young guys and inexperienced guys can play right away at that position group. Better than anybody, better than any other spot on the field, I think. You can play a running back early. So, you know, that is a position where if you might have some inexperience there, might have some depth issues, you can play young guys. But, yeah, obviously they brought Batty in for a reason, and he's a guy that I think has got a lot of he's just got a unique skill set, a lot of speed, a lot of explosiveness, obviously a great return man. And, you know, you would love to have him as a weapon in your offense, but you might know that you might not be dealing with him at 100% at the beginning of the year.
Well, and that's where, I mean, if he's not 100%, you shouldn't have to have him in game one for sure.
No, absolutely not. And I think if he's healthy, if they feel like they can give him a good workload by the time SEC play starts, that would be a great sign. So whatever you have to do to get to that point, I think will be smart. And then he also mentioned with Jair Shorter, just, you know, being smart with him. He's had a long injury history. I think he's had like 2 seasons that he's completely missed in his college career.
When he plays, he's put up great numbers.
And you got to just make sure it happens. Because, I mean, just some guys at this point in their career are just injury prone. It happens. It seems like they just have bad luck and, you know, their bodies aren't
he's not a flimsy looking
durable.
Dude.
No, yeah. But when you have had injuries, it just becomes kind of a thing where it can kind of snowball on
well,
you.
Well, and many times if you have one injury, you're overcompensating and you hurt something else because you're trying to protect against re-injuring.
Speaking of injury and speaking of injury prone, did you see what happened with Bryce Harper last night?
No.
So Bryce Harper came to the plate in the 7th inning of a close game, and I can't remember what the count was. Or what the score was. It was like the 7th inning, I think. He was in the game, and he's at the plate, and he took every pitch of the at-bat, never took the bat off his shoulder. And as soon as the guy put it, you know, started throwing, he just stepped back and took it. And guy worked a full count and then took strike 3 down the middle looking. Apparently he was sick, but he played. And I was so confused.
No, I didn't hear.
I was
about
so
that.
Confused. I was so confused. Why? Okay, if he's sick, why is he out there?
He played again today.
Yeah. What? You know, why are you out there? And he went to the plate. And I'm not kidding. It is the most. I am not swinging this bat I've ever seen from a position. Like I old pitchers used to put up more of a fight in a bat.
It almost
than that.
Sounds like it's sort of a protest. That all right,
that's what it looked
like. I'm not swinging the bat for you or something like
that's
that.
What
I mean,
that's what it looked
like. Hey,
he
went 0-for-4 with 2 Ks today, so
yeah,
I don't know.
It's what it looked like, and that, you know, it was the most bizarre thing.
He only
thing.
Got 2 hits today.
But it was the thing with with Harper, though, you know, he's had you know, injuries this year he's had to deal with. And, like, yeah, you can be a really, really talented dude, and stuff can kind of go wrong for you there. And yeah, I was wondering if you saw it because
No, I didn't.
My brother sent me that video last night, and he was like, "What in the world is this?" And it's he is just completely. As soon as the pitch comes, as soon as the motion comes, he just kind of steps back and just lets it go. And the funny thing is, whoever was on the mound for the other team couldn't throw strikes at the beginning of the bat, and then he just like, well, he's not swinging, so they just started throwing him right down the middle. But anyway, that's just a long winded way of saying like. Yeah, some guys are just have those injuries, and so you got to be smart with them as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned comings and goings. I mean, the 2 guys that weren't here this summer, looks like one will be and the other will not.
Yeah, it does sound like DeQuavius Story is going to be a hard time for him to come in. They don't seem very helpful.
You know, face
hopeful,
it's much harder for a high schooler who, for somebody in high school, who needs to make up grades than it is junior college.
And Quintrell Jamison Travis, who goes by Bobby, I was unaware of that, but I learned that at Media Days.
I'd heard that. I had him on the roster as Bobby.
Yeah, for some reason that completely slipped me because they was like, "What about Bobby?" I was like, "Who in the world is Bobby?" And then I heard Travis. I was like, "Oh, okay, that makes sense." Sounds like he's going to be able to get his work done and come in. And as Freeze said, like, you can never have too many defensive linemen,
especially
a guy like him who had a pretty good JUCO run. And Auburn's had a good track record of getting guys from JUCO, plugging them in. Again, might not be a superstar, might not be a dude to get you a ton of sacks or a ton of tackles for loss, but if you can get him in the rotation, mm-hmm. you can never have enough quality depth on the defensive line.
The ability to keep guys fresh there on the defensive front.
Huge.
I mean, it's something.
Especially when you're coming off 2 years.
Auburn didn't really take an attempt of doing it the last couple of years.
And you think about in the Malzahn era and before then, just how that was. I mean, that was Rodney Garner's calling card. Like, it was.
He's going to waves of defensive line.
Yeah, and like, he could have a Derrick Brown or a Marlon Davidson or a D Ford, but yet those guys were going to, Carl Lawson, they were going to play the guys behind them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of one of my favorite players I think I've ever covered, just because I liked his story. He was always good with the media, and I always think back to a good example of that is Andrew Williams. Andrew Williams was a good recruit coming out of high school, never was a starter, but was like a consistent second wave defensive tackle, played really, really well, and like just bought time for those guys higher up on the depth chart, and you need more of that. And Auburn has not had enough of those guys the last couple of years.
I don't know if they haven't had enough of those guys. They just haven't
used them. Yeah.
Because sometimes the only way they're going to get better.
Zacchavis Walker was at the beginning of his career, and we hadn't seen him the last couple of seasons. So like, you need more guys like that. And then
you need to play them so they can get better.
And then you have transfers that come in. We all think that, you know, Justin Rogers is going to play a lot. You know, you could see that, you know, Masai Nasilakite is going to play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what does a guy like Lawrence Johnson do for you? You know, what are some of these younger
guys? Talked about him at Media Days.
Yep. Like, they were pretty.
One of the guys that has had a good summer, I believe.
I believe that was Cam Stutz talking about the defensive lineman he hasn't liked going up against.
Mm-hmm.
But you need more of those. I mean, Freeze said it. He's like, you know, let's not beat around the bush here. It's like, look at Georgia. Georgia will run three deep on that defensive line, and when they get on the field, you can't tell. Like, you can tell, like, maybe when the superstar is on the field and when there's not, but the play is not going to look a whole lot different for the unit. And, like, Auburn's got to get back to that. You know, that's the thing. Again, that was the calling card of those teams with Ryan and Gardner. And that's the thing with – that's the thing with defensive line play. It's the SEC is such a line of scrimmage league, but college football is such that a league there. You need to have quality depth and quality play from your defensive line pretty much every single snap, because that is the one position group that can flip the math for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can get your quarterback or I can stop your running game with a good consistent front, that's going to help me out in the back end, because it's impossible. I don't know how you cover modern passing games. So if I can commit more guys back there to take care of that, and I can just turn loose a few of those guys to affect, you know, your offensive line, that changes everything. The problem is that Auburn's had some dudes. I mean, no one's going to sit here and say that Colby Wooden and Derek Hall weren't great players.
Right.
But it wasn't the depth, because when they were off the field, it was very evident. Or if they were on the field later in games, it was very evident they were just completely wiped out.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to our first break here. I want you to think about this, Justin. I mean, with all the newcomers that are coming in, the transfers in, think of a few who you feel like could play the most significant roles
mm-hmm.
of the transfers that Auburn has brought in. It's 20 or 21, I guess. 20, I think.
I think it's 20, yeah.
Yeah, I think is what it is. All right, we'd love your thoughts, too. Anything on your mind sports-wise? We'll run a little more audio for you as well as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
The 40th annual
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Final three teams today, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and South Carolina, wrapping things up at SEC Media Days. We were talking before we got to the break. As we went to the break, we talked about, you know, some of the things that Hugh Freeze had said, and we've talked quite a bit about the newcomers. I mean, half this roster, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a little over half, I think, now.
Well, I've got 84 guys on scholarship, and 42, I think, are new.
That makes sense. And now that Powell Gordon being back in the mix now as well, I think that might be something I haven't put back on the spreadsheet yet. But, yeah, I mean, that's about as big as an overhaul. It's not Colorado level, but I don't think anybody else had the same.
It's as big as I can recall in the SEC.
For sure.
And of course,
I know LSU had a big one last year, but I don't think it was this big.
I think they had 35 new guys last year. But that's what you can do in these days of the transfer portal.
Yep.
And Auburn took advantage, and they have a lot of experienced guys. Now, there's some talented young guys that have come in as well, but I would think that it's probably going to be some of the experienced guys that will have major impacts. Who are a few of the ones that come to mind that you feel like are going to be significant role players?
I feel like Peyton Thorne's cheating, so we can just assume that one. I'm leaning Shane Hooks because I think of the wide receivers. He has the most
catch radius.
Yeah, biggest catch radius that go up and get it. That Auburn had the length, size.
He also has a track record. He's caught he's caught a lot of passes. I know it's at Jackson State, but still
shorter. And he had a good career at Ohio too.
Yep.
Shorter is a guy that I think can be you see him a few times a game, maybe more than necessarily like a guy you're going to get the ball a ton. That just hasn't been his track record in his career.
You know what? I sort of go back to the out of nowhere. Darvin Adams, Terrell Zachary.
Mm-hmm.
I think Shorter is more the Terrell Zachary, the T-Zach guy that look out or he could be by you.
Yeah, exactly. Caleb Burton, I think, is a guy for the future for sure. So I'm looking at Hooks there. Rivaldo Fairweather, just what he brings to that tight end room. It's a different dimension than they've had in the past there with your explosiveness. The three transfers, it could be four on the offensive line when it's all said and done. But I think the main three that we've already seen are all going to start. I think Jaden Muskrat's got a good chance to start. It'll be interesting to see where they see him.
Guard's going to be interesting. I mean, there's a lot of competition.
Guard's
going to
be very interesting. And they obviously like Cam Stutz and Tate Johnson. And Jeremiah Wright's in that mix as well. I mean, there's a lot to like about that group. Defensive line. I think the key guy, Justin Rogers, just because of his track record in the SEC, his size makes a lot of sense. And then the other one that just jumps out to me. I'll go two more. I've put my marker down that I'm going to be the Jalen McLeod guy this year. Just from the time Auburn started recruiting him.
Auburn needs somebody there at that spot.
I just really love his fit with this team. I love a pass rusher who is different in terms of size. The versatility. I think he's a perfect fit for what Ron Roberts loves to do on defense. I talked to Elijah McAllister about him in Nashville, and he said, look, doesn't matter how big he is. Pass rushing is about explosiveness, using your hands and effort. And he's like, he's got all that. I mean, he said, I might be 3 inches, 4 inches taller than him and 30, 40 pounds heavier than him, but that dude can rush the passer because he does all those things really well. It doesn't matter how big he is. And then keep an eye really closely now, I think, on Austin Keys.
Yeah.
At the linebackers. I'm just interested to see where they see Larry Nixon, but Austin Keys obviously is a guy who was here in the spring and is just the ideal, it's kind of like the prototype size and skill set you want at a Mike linebacker in this defense.
334-321-1390. Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Matt is up next. Hey, Matt.
Hey guys, I was wondering over the last week if you guys, anybody even thought about or heard anybody talking about the fact that we missed out on getting Lane Kiffin instead of Hugh Freeze. I think everybody sort of settled in that maybe that worked out for the best. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it was funny because you heard a lot from Hugh, about people trying to ask him about Ole Miss. He's like, hey, man, this is a long time ago and all that. And I do think that game's going to be just the storyline and the narrative around it's going to just be massive. But I'm interested to see what Ole Miss does this year. They've definitely got talent. I haven't seen or heard anything that Lane said today outside of what we played earlier about NIL on the transfer portal. I would love to know what in the world he's thinking about with all these quarterbacks, because that is just one of the most bizarre offseason things I've seen this year.
I did hear he did address that in one of the interviews that I heard him, and he said, look, we were down to one, and that's why we needed to go into the portal. And he goes, and we were fortunate enough to get a few.
Yeah, more than a few, bud.
But, I mean, it really, from just the way he was talking, it sounds like Jackson Dart and Spencer are the and Spencer Sanders are the guys that are really battling for it right now.
And I'll be interested, to your point, Matt, like the end of last season for Ole Miss, it just collapsed on them.
I think a lot of that had to do with Lane thinking about leaving.
Yeah, exactly. And so I wonder how they're going to bounce back, because we've talked about it here. Like, there's a lot of hype in Oxford about this team, and mm-hmm. they don't necessarily have the easiest schedule in the world this season. So I do think Hugh, being a guy who is coming back into the league as a fresh start kind of dude who's done it before, recruited at a high level consistently in the past, I do think he's going to end up being maybe a better fit for Auburn.
I agree.
But it'll be very interesting to see when they cross paths on the field starting this year, and I think Auburn's going to have an advantage with it being a Jordan Hare.
Yeah, I just hope people will – we've talked about this a lot. Give Hugh Freeze time to – I mean, it took, 3-4 years for Kirby Smart to get Georgia where they need to be. And we want to be competitive, and we want to get better, and we want to recruit. It's maybe a little easier with transfer portal, but it's going to be a few years. But thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call, Matt.
And I think you could compare it kind of – different situations, obviously, but – I think you saw what Josh Heupel was able to do in 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think that is definitely doable for
Auburn. A couple of years is much more reasonable than the expectation of, are you going to turn it around in one?
And what did Tennessee do in 2021? It was, hey, we're back.
They won 7 games, right?
Felt like they were stable again, uh-huh. played a wild bowl game, and just kind of – and then the next year they take that big step forward. Okay, now people know what this offense is. They can kind of click in it. They had the big win over Alabama and all that. To a different degree, but kind of in a similar boat, I think you could also have some comparisons of what Sam Pittman did at Arkansas. Now, I know the ceiling is different. It has been at Arkansas.
Let's watch Florida this year, too.
We'll see what Florida does. Arkansas, Pittman inherits a pretty big mess.
A huge mess.
And it took him a couple years ago, but I think we'll see. I'm not as high on Arkansas this year as a lot of people are. I think they have a lot of talent in their backfield, but I got questions.
I don't know about their defense.
Yeah, and I hope T. Will does a good job there, because personally I liked him, always enjoyed covering him. But yeah, it's interesting to see what kind of team they're going to have back there. But anyway, I think it's very similar. It's like, okay, it took a couple years, and then you say, oh, this is our identity, this is who we are. And while Arkansas's ceiling right now might not be win the SEC or go to Atlanta, it is at least a step up, and it took them a spot to get there. And I think Tennessee is a really good example of what Auburn could do. If Auburn wins 7 or 8 games this year, feel like they're getting back on track, getting the recruiting rolling, getting the roster feeling like, hey, we know what we're doing, and this is the type of roster we need to do what we want to do on offense and defense. Then you turn them loose in year two, maybe catch a couple teams by surprise and make some real noise. And look at what we're – I mean, I think – pretty much across the board, people are going to pick Tennessee to finish second in the East this year.
Yep.
And, it would be that I would put them right up there with LSU and Georgia and Alabama. And, I mean, you could put Tennessee right there.
I would think they would be most be that people's fourth. A&M.
Depending on what A&M.
You feel better about picking Tennessee there than A&M.
And they're going to have to, can Joe Milton get the third chance for Joe Milton to be the guy? And maybe, but I mean, I wouldn't question what Tennessee's capable of doing with that offense because of what they did with Hendon Hooker. In a similar vein, if Auburn can get it rolling this year, whether it's Peyton Thorne or it's Robbie Ashford or whoever, if they can get it rolling on offense, it can be kind of set up in the future where it's like, okay, Phillip Montgomery and Hugh Freeze, you feel good about it. That's what you got to build back up to.
334-321-1390. Marcus, we've got to get to break. Hopefully you can hang on. We'll be right back, and you'll be up first as we head into the final half hour here on the Thursday Drive.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Thursday, and let's get right to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Marcus has been hanging on. Hey, Marcus.
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
Doing fine.
Got a quick question for you. I know that we're really excited about getting the linebacker that transferred from LSU, and I know Chip Kelly said he hated losing him. Two parts. Any idea why he left, and how much does that hurt us at linebacker as far as depth?
Yeah, I mean, not to go into a ton of detail, but DeMario Tolan had personal issues.
Tragedy.
Yeah, I think I'm comfortable to say that. Some family issues,
yes.
That is causing him to step away from football. It does seem like there's going to be a door potentially open for him to come back. They're still going to try to sort that out. He could go back. He's from Orlando. He could end up going back closer home. But it was kind of to the point where, you know, there was stuff going on in his life that he needed to take care of much more than football. And when you talk about how it hurts Auburn, getting Larry Nixon helped them this year. They've got good depth at inside linebacker. I think Tolan's one of those guys that they would have loved for him to be, you know, a key guy maybe next year. Mm-hmm. This year he would have played. He'd have gotten in the rotation.
He would have been a situational or special teams with Kelly at LSU.
Yeah, he played a good bit and you know, got in as a rotational piece on defense and on special teams. Wasn't a star, wasn't a key guy, but they wanted to get him some experience. Got all the athletic talent in the world. You just hope that he's able to get back to playing football and things go well for him personally. But, yeah, he had to take care of some stuff in his life that had nothing to do with football, nothing disciplinary or anything like
no.
that. People have been asking about that. It was just he needed to step away from football right now.
All right, guys. Thank you. Thank you for the show.
Appreciate the call, Marcus. 334.
Yeah. And it's important to say that because I think there's a lot of
sure.
Whenever you don't come out and say it.
People's first reaction is, oh, what did he do?
Yeah, it's disciplinary or anything. And like I said last week, you don't know if it's ever going to be, you know, a situation where everybody knows the details. And again, the sensitivity of it, you don't want to be the one to tell it. And, you know, I think it would be best that, you know, his story needs to be told by him whenever he's comfortable doing that, if he's ever comfortable doing that. And then there was the report, obviously, earlier this week that Powell Gordon will be back on the team, you know, and that'll help with the inside linebacker
right.
depth for sure. You know, again, if you're losing a young guy, keep a young guy, especially a guy close, you know, a local kid. Hadn't made a decision, like it had entered the transfer portal because it didn't seem like he was going to really have much of a role. Things change. He gets an opportunity to come back, so I think that'll help everything out.
Yeah. We were talking again, you know, with the three teams that were at SEC media.
Classic player last year, it's remarkable that a certain coaching staff did not think he was worth recruiting. And obviously Lane Kiffin. It's a great – I mean, obviously, has always been a really good coach for running backs to play with. But, you know, again, Auburn's going to be fine, I think, at running back moving forward. But, man, he was – that is a gem from right down the road. And I think he'll have a lot of success this year. It'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, SEC player of the year picks, I mean, that's – if Ole Miss has a really good year, you know, mm-hmm. he could get in that mix for sure.
Who do you like?
Brock Bowers. It's hard. I mean, it's
ooh, you know,
it's
yeah.
hard for me to get. Usually, you go quarterbacks, and so while I was going through my ballot today of like just teams, I'm like, yeah, I really like KJ Jefferson. I really like Jaden Daniels. I really like Quinn Shott. I like these. But I mean, I think if you would go defense, I mean, Harold Perkins is about mm-hmm. as scary as you can get. But Brock Bowers was the number one receiver on a national champion, and you know. He's just a freak show at tight end and is going to be one of the best to ever play the position that I can remember at the college level. And it's like, I mean, whoever the quarterback is at Georgia this year, just feed the ball to him and let him go to work. I think when the best and most talented player on the best team in the country is a tight end, that tells you a lot. But that's just how special that guy is.
Yeah, he's not he's by no means. I mean, we've seen tight ends change so much.
Yeah.
Through the years, and then he's like another level.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you look at the league, and you've got like, you know, you got the Kelseys, and the, you know, you've got a guy like, you know, I mean, you got playing Kyle Pitts. I mean, Kyle Pitts came really close to kind of doing a lot of the stuff George Kittle, you know, and others in the league, but like, I think he's going to have the ability to just come in right away and like challenge to be
in that
tier, and that is so. That's so wild to think about. But again, it's the other thing there when you talk about building something up, Georgia built their way up to feel like they could go out to California and take the best tight end of the country, and that's not easy. That's not easy to do, mm-hmm. and you know, that's what you're going up against when you're a team like Auburn or anybody else in the SEC trying to chase them down.
But as you know, one of the things Hugh Freeze has said this too. I mean, now it's not the way it used to be. It's not, well, they can only get 25 because you only deal with the 85, but there still are limits.
Yeah.
So I mean, there should be enough talent for everybody to be able, if they do it well.
And if you recruit nationally, you know, yeah. I mean, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida are always going to be the most important states for Auburn in recruiting.
And Auburn's right in the middle of them.
Right. But if you can dip into some more national areas and pick out a few players like Georgia's had, like Alabama's had in the past.
Alabama has gone so national, and now they're going international.
Yeah, exactly. And so for Auburn, you know, they've got some California kids they're in the mix for already. Texas has been good to them the last few years.
And the big California offensive lineman's coming in for Big Cat.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you can kind of spread your wings a little bit and try to get some guys. Like knowing that when you're at Auburn, you know, and that's where the thing that makes Auburn so unique is that you're not the number one state school in Alabama or Georgia, but you have access to both of them like anybody, and you can just dip right in and get a lot of them, build your roster with them. Florida, too, has always been good to them. If you're Auburn, you can, you can build a really, really good team out of it. I know Jason says it all the time, like, you know, the best Auburn teams are built around here in your backyard and then expand out a little bit more. But if you can go – like it's like the transfer portal. If you can get into a reputation where like geography or, you know, wherever you're from doesn't limit you from just plucking a guy or two that you really, really want, that's the sign of a really good program.
Yeah, what you need to do is first make sure you take care of your backyard.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can't. You were just mentioning, you know, the prior staff not realizing that Quinshon Judkins could play in the SEC, and not only could he play in the SEC, but excel in the SEC.
Again, another example of running backs can just plug and play.
Yeah.
You know, it was awesome from minute one.
But talent within 50 to 100 miles,
yep.
you had better, you know, get most of those guys.
Yeah, and you're not going to get them all. You're not going to get them all, and I do think there's a lot of – so everybody will point to guys who went to Auburn High, guys who went to Central Phoenix, Cam Coleman being the recent one, of like, oh, you need to be able – you have to make sure you get those guys. And, like, I get it. I do. You want to be able to kind of build a wall around your home area for sure. But there's also the hyper-local guys. You know, I get it. Dudes are going to want to move.
Yeah, they want something different. They want to see something different. Sometimes it's good to get away from from your real backyard.
Yeah, and just hey, I want to carve out my own path. I mean, Auburn's had been able to benefit from some of that in the past. Seth Williams, you know, not wanting to stay in Tuscaloosa, they end up coming. You get guys like that. I do remember, though, when my brother was in high school, he was really good friends with a big-name recruit out of Auburn High, and this guy did not go to Auburn. And part of the reason was like, hey, I just wanted to kind of do my own thing. So you're always going to get that, but yeah. Get down the road a little bit more and kind of spread out, because I mean within 100 miles you can get to the Atlanta area, you can get to most of your big spots in the.
I'm not talking about losing out on guys. I'm talking about not realizing or
yeah exactly you know exactly get in the mix for
passing on get guys that you might be able to get
for sure, and you can get most of Alabama, most of Georgia with that, and you can dip in Florida a little bit too, just with that radius. And I think, yeah, you can also, like, it was really helpful, like, you know, Joseph Phillips. It's not all the time that there's an elite player, you know, SEC caliber player coming from Tuskegee,
right.
But when they are, you might want to be able to jump on and take advantage.
Definitely want to be in the mix.
Yeah, and they were in the mix for guys like Cam Coleman, a lot of those Phoenix City kids for a while they've been in the mix for. Might not land all of them, but Montgomery. You know, go up to the Atlanta area, go into Birmingham, a little stretching a little bit, but I would like to see if Auburn can continue to kind of build up a bigger presence in Mobile, because that, I mean, we know Mobile's a very talent rich area.
Tremendous for Coach Dye.
Yeah, and Auburn, I mean, they've also hit some areas. The talent in South Alabama in the Wiregrass is getting better. Kelvick Falk being a guy from Highland Home. I mean, they got Jabarian Burnett from Andalusia. I mean, when I was in high school, there were hardly any SEC guys around us, and now it feels like there's just more and more coming out of there. As you take advantage, South Georgia's been really good to Auburn.
I was
going to
say Northwest Florida. Northwest Florida is picking up. Auburn used to really, really hit hard. Hadn't been that much the case lately.
Yeah, and you just want to see if you can kind of get that. Yeah, Auburn kind of transitioned to more South Florida for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can build a really good roster from those three states and then just kind of pick and choose.
Oh, yeah.
Then,
if you go like 3 hours any direction, there's mm-hmm. a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm. It's always been interesting to me, though, and again, Auburn's not close to Tennessee. Before a bordering state, Tennessee hasn't traditionally been a place where Auburn's gone to a lot, been into Mississippi a lot mm-hmm. more. It's just that's always kind of been funny to me. It's always been Georgia and Alabama, and then some of Florida, and then
part of it's just because of the fact that I mean, there's
UT,
there are spots. Yeah. Memphis, you know, is over there closer to Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
but there just generally is not as much talent.
No.
In the state of Tennessee.
No, I mean it's Mississippi's a place. JUCO and high school talent. You can go.
A lot more talent. It seems like in the state of Mississippi than there is Tennessee.
For sure,
a lot.
And I know Mississippi is a big size-wise state, but population-wise, I mean, I think they get a, you know, everybody always points to, and this is another place where Auburn has struck big in the past. Louisiana has always been the place where mm-hmm. that's where you're just going to get more talent per capita than anywhere else. I won't say Mississippi is right up there with them, but I feel like Mississippi kind of gets underrated. I mean, when you look at some of the best players that have come through the state of Mississippi – that have helped Auburn and other places.
They're feeding three Division I schools there that have had, you know, have had modicums of success, as well as Alabama and LSU and Auburn.
Georgia will reach in there for sure. Yeah,
Florida and Florida State have gone in and gotten some great players out of Mississippi.
That's where it kind of gets pretty funny, where you can have the different waves of that, and then with the SEC expanding into Texas and Oklahoma, or expanding into Texas more, adding Oklahoma. I do wonder if that's going to become more and more of a battleground state for recruiting, because guys know that, hey, you know, I can go sign at Auburn, or I can go play at, you know, Georgia or Florida or whatever, and I know I'll be able to come home, you know, maybe once every couple of years.
It's going to become much, much easier for players to do that, because I'll tell you what, until 10, 15 years ago, I never thought I'd see as many Arkansas connections with Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about that. I mean, it's like Auburn's recruiting players in Arkansas, and players are back and forth. It's like it almost feels like Arkansas is a border state now.
Yeah, and Arkansas traditionally is not a state that produces a ton of talent, but they've got – it's stepped up. A lot of people moving into northwest Arkansas, I think you're seeing some of that kind of grow. I mean, Walker White coming in for Auburn now. You've gotten some really good talent out of there mm-hmm. in the past. Yeah, Arkansas is an interesting spot, and also it helps – not to disrespect them, it also helps that Arkansas is not this super powerhouse that just gets everybody they want.
That's true.
They're not like LSU. You know, LSU is like, hey, y'all come recruit Louisiana. That's awesome, but we're going to get most of them. Like, that's always been the thing with LSU. Arkansas, I want to say Arkansas, the state of Arkansas has only produced like 2 5-stars ever, you know? But there's a lot of good 4-star talent you can get out of there, and obviously Auburn's picked up some of them in the past.
We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Thursday Drive.
It's been from the Abbey Award winning.